Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Daniel G and James Sheehan from Priority Intelligence Group, which is listed on AIM. The company offers the Priority Advisor platform, an AI-driven tool that assists SMEs with governance, financing, brand management and marketing through data-powered insights. Having signed its first customers in Q4 2024, Priority Intelligence Group aims for further expansion post-listing. Welcome back to the podcast, gents. How's things?
Good, thank you.
Hi, Phil. Yeah, good to be here.
Had a good Christmas.
It was very good, thank you. I've been up in Yorkshire for the whole Christmas period, and it's been nice, quiet, lots of overeating. But aside from that, it's been really good. Nice to just have a kind of relaxing week post what has been a very, very busy kind of couple of months listing Priority Intelligence Group.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, so just talk us through that listing news and, you know, how it's been working towards the RTO and listing, and sort of what motivated the decision to list on AIM?
Yeah, how's it been? It's been an experience. It's an interesting one. A lot of people ask the question of when's the right time to float your company or to use the capital markets. Obviously, we're a relatively early stage technology company, founded 2.5 years ago, as you rightly said, onboarded first clients in Q4 this year. And we took the decision to come to the markets, I guess, relatively the beginning of our journey, and to give people the opportunity to kind of come along with us. What drove us there is that James and I, we've known each other, worked together for over 10 years now, showing our age a bit, I guess. And we spent our entire careers in the UK capital markets, wealth management, private equity, hedge funds, trading side. And we've always wanted to go on this journey. We've helped a lot of business owners and founders come on this journey from the other side of the table. And when we kind of set Priority up 2.5 years ago, we always came with the intention of bringing it public, going on that capital markets journey, because I guess in essence, it's been the backbone of our entire careers. The capital markets gave us careers, gave us kind of fantastic experience. And we wanted to share that with kind of a wider audience. So why wouldn't we be public is probably an easy question.
I'd agree with that. I'd also say, just to add into that, you know, the market hasn't been having a great time at the moment. It's been tough. But AIM, you know, we've seen a lot of companies leaving rather than joining. You know, we do want to be, hopefully, heading into the, and I'm a contrarian by discipline, really. And I think that the important thing is that if we can come to market at this time, it could well be the right time to come to market, if that makes sense. A little bit like the old adage of being greedy when others are fearful and therefore, when others are greedy, I would like to see us come into a marketplace, hopefully towards the bottom end of the ebb, and start to ride a wave up. And obviously, in the area that we're in and the technology focus that we've got, it's very much at the starting blocks for AI technology and for the business growth opportunity that we have. And I'm hoping that we're also at that growth opportunity for AIM and the market in general in the UK.
Absolutely. I mean, so obviously the flagship platform on Priority Intelligence is this advisor that I alluded to. And obviously from that, there will be the Spotlight package as well, product addressing governance, financing, brand management, as I say, marketing, and then the social media side with Spotlight. But how do these products stand out from other AI-driven tools that are on the market?
I was going to say, there's a big issue. I mean, I've been in financial technology for over 10 years now, kind of various different roles, built products, exited a couple of businesses as well, run big teams, small teams. And I was, I was hosting London Tech Week 4 or 5 years ago. I was on an AI panel, and there were so many cool kind of products, innovations coming out there. And then obviously kind of started using it myself, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, being kind of a native developer. And the biggest issue I always had was context. And that is inherently probably one of the biggest, I guess, flaws with AI. And as we kind of move ahead in the revolution, is as these large language models, these LLMs, are getting more and more complex, we're adding parameters in. So in effect, the amount of information in there, every time we add in more knowledge, we lose a little bit of context. Which, if we're doing broad strokes tasks, you know, writing some kind of governance document or writing, you know, maybe a poem or something a bit creative, is great. More parameters means more creativity. But I'm a business person. I'm running a business. I need that level of context to use it for my business, whether I'm running a technology company listed on AIM, whether I'm running maybe a public markets company like a natural resources company, or maybe I've got an online shop selling hardware. I don't need all these parameters. I need context and knows about my business. It's reliable, it's consistent, and actually it's something that I can use in my day-to-day. And that was something that just didn't exist. So 2.5 years ago, we set out to build contextual models, so really tiny models that actually had individual use cases for specific businesses and actually help people. Rather than kind of creating this mass market appeal of a generic platform, how do we create a mass market platform with that contextual relevance to every single individual user? And that's where Priority was born out of.
Yeah. I'd add into that that it, you know, because of the direction that you've come from, Phil, it is holistic. It is a holistic tool. And the aim of our platform is to support growth businesses at every stage of their journey, not just at inception and not just, for example, to raise capital, which is the background that Dan and I both come from. It's very much about looking at a business and understanding their immediate pain points at that point in time, hence their priority, and actually being able to deliver tools, a suite of tools that enables that company to dive in and out when they need to of specific key professional agency-backed services generally.
Yeah, that's fair enough, James. I mean, in terms of, you know, I'm trying to think of the words, in terms of marketing in general, is the plan with Priority AI to replace traditional marketing services or to sort of work with them together to drive better results?
I think one of the key takeaways from our platform is that we say that we are AI-driven and human-delivered. And that from that, the essence of that, the understanding that we want to instill within the companies that use us is that we don't see artificial intelligence, AI or technology solutions as a replacement for human beings. We never will see them as a replacement for human beings. They're a support mechanism designed to add value, to help reduce cost and to actually help save time. And we genuinely believe that the tools that we're building, developing and then supplying to our customers will do that. And we're quite keen for agency service providers to come and use our platform as well in order to help them save money and time and hopefully pass on that saving to their underlying customers. So ultimately, it's a support tool, not just a replacement tool.
And then I guess it's the question of the competitors come along, right? If they see that you're doing well and you're being successful, somebody's going to try and copy the model. I mean, is there a data moat around the product? You know, is it difficult for rivals to compete? In terms of, for example, let's say you're creating a data room, you know, how long will your system take? Because traditionally that's quite expensive.
We can create data rooms in seconds on the inception of the customer. So as soon as a customer joins the platform, one of the tools that we actually have built and we deliver is a gated data room provision, which is valuable to a lot of companies depending on what they're trying to do. It might be M&A services, it might be capital raising, it might be a number of reasons that somebody would want a data room, even going on an IPO journey. We've got obviously a data room with lots and lots of documentation in there. So to use that, very simple for us to create that, cost effective. In terms of competitiveness and how easy it is for others to replicate, I'll be honest, this is not something that is very difficult for people to replicate over time if they really wanted to. Where we have the opportunity, I guess, is first mover advantage and understanding our current customer base and the fact that we do already have a very vast network in the SME space. Because once customers come onto the platform and once they come on to use our services, because of the nature of AI, they're training their models and that data and that training that goes into their bespoke GPT means that if they do leave, they lose all of the value that they've created over time. So it kind of builds a natural moat around the business where companies, once they're on platform and once they're generating and gaining the benefit of being on platform, will find it difficult to go to a competitor, because once they go to a competitor, obviously they lose access to their first party data on our platform and also all of the training and development that's occurred.
I guess
I'm generally quite good at that.
Yeah. I guess one of the issues, I mean, obviously I'm a creator, both in the audio and written. And, you know, with artificial intelligence, Google in particular sometimes can figure out what's, and also the social media platforms can punish AI generated content. So I guess the question is, how does this model ensure that content that it's putting out is going to the top of everybody's feeds, when obviously, you know, things like Twitter and Google are trying to prevent that from happening.
The problem is, Charles, that I'll jump in here kind of with a technical...
That's more of a technical question, yeah.
The problem is with AI-generated content, and I think I agree with most of these social media algorithms. If I see AI-generated content, I switch off. My view as a consumer is that if you want me to spend my time or my money, kind of understand your brand, we'll spend some time or money creating some content. It's a two-way street, right? So I'm kind of exactly in the same kind of boat. And the way that a lot of these plagiarism checkers, I did an interview just before Christmas, actually, and we were talking about kids' homework, kind of more in the States than in the UK, but a lot of teachers are kind of having to run all this work through plagiarism checkers. And a lot of it is coming back, nope, ChatGPT made this, Gemini, Anthropic. And the way that those processes work is they're actually looking for homogeneity in data. So what they're looking for is the same parameters coming up again and again and again. So if you asked me, what's the capital of the UK? And I gave you a response, kind of structured as a sentence in a certain way, what those plagiarism checkers would do is look for that kind of structure of words in the data. So in that large language model, are the words structured that way? Are we using the same kind of vocabulary, et cetera, et cetera? So we're looking for the same kind of, you know, matches in data. It's exactly the same how AI works, whether it's image creation, captions, hashtagging, whatever it might be. And when you're all using the same models, say we've got 20 or 30 big players, you know, from the likes of Anthropic down, who we're all kind of using, it's easy to go check them. Where our platform differs is we don't use those. We use bespoke models. So we use small LLMs, or kind of narrow LLMs, which we create specifically for a business user. The reason that's interesting is that training data doesn't exist anywhere else apart from our internal data silos. So when they run for a plagiarism checker, actually, they've got no open source data to reference. So what you'll find is actually a lot of our content doesn't flag on plagiarism checkers. A lot of our hashtagging doesn't. A lot of the content actually looks relatively human delivered. The reason being is we're using really, really tiny data sets that don't exist anywhere else in the world. So we're not kind of having that constantly matching data. And the cool part, and I guess it references back to the point earlier about kind of, you know, copying the product, et cetera, and that data moat, which you touched on, which is fantastic, is generative AI by nature isn't iterative. What we mean by that is you using a ChatGPT or a Gemini, you're not impacting the training data. If you go and produce a really cool Twitter post for your business, for example, you go, well, this is awesome. Go and post that, you have no impact on that training data whatsoever. Unfortunately, you don't matter. Out of 10 trillion parameters, you're not one of them, which is a bit rubbish, right? Because ultimately, you've created something really good, which you put on Twitter, you get huge traction, you think, right, that really worked for me. How do I do it again? There's no way for you to control that. With our models, they are iterative. So what we have is a feedback loop. So when you go and build a Twitter post on the platform, for example, you go post it, our social listening will go and actually analyze that. So in effect, it's like mark your own homework. You go and produce maybe a blog post, a Twitter post, an Instagram post. The platform will be out there listening, going, okay, how did I do? Do people like it? What's the sentiment around this post? Was it well received? Was it shared? Was it commented on other platforms? Are there cross-platform similarities? All of that information will go back into your training data. So next time you come on the platform, click a button, we're actually looking, okay, what did I do last time? Was it good? Was it bad? Did it work? And that training data is going to build and build and build. So it does mean that when you come to use the platform, the more you use it, the more efficient it becomes. But also, if you want to come off the platform, what you're in effect doing is throwing the keys back to all of that hard work you've done to build out your model, build out your community, build out your data set. We, in effect, are hosting that on platform. So there's an incentive to stay on the platform, to use it more, to share it within your team, to share it within your communities. In effect, it's a you get out what you put in type product. And we want people to use it to save money, to be more efficient. And it's going to help them in the long run.
So it's an engagement feedback loop. So you release a tweet, the AI checks the feedback and then trains the advisor model. Those models then use, I guess, regenerative data via the feedback loop. And then the more data, i.e. the more people use it, the larger the community gets. And then you get more data, it just improves over time. So when you start up, it's pretty good. And then after, say, 6 months, 12 months, it's exceptional. And then at that point, customers effectively can't leave because they'll lose access to that, to the effect of that data that they created for themselves by the model. Is that about right?
That's the plan, Charles.
I wouldn't say they can't leave.
I'll rephrase. They didn't want it.
By the Hotel California, you checked it, but you'll never leave.
Come to the hotel priority. Anyway, Dan, coming back to the finances of this, because I see there is massive, 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 massive value being created in the US. Anything AI scenario seems to be worth literally hundreds of millions, billions, and even in the case of NVIDIA, trillions. How, in our beautiful London-based market, which seems to need proof of revenues, proof of profit, how are you going to make this like viable as a business that people are going to go, oh, not only is this AI and it's working and it's helping companies, but you're going to make it make money?
This, I think, Kev, is exactly where we started, Dan and I. So again, Dan and I's background to continue is been in capital markets. It's been in funding and financing small businesses over the course of the last 20 years, nearly, or certainly for me, 20 years, and Dan something similar. And we are very keen to drive revenue. I mean, that's one of the key focus points that we have. It's important to us to build a business, not to just build something that has blue sky potential. We want both, but it's very important to us to drive revenue, build business as a first point of call so that we know that we've got stable, long-term value growth within our revenue stream. And that's key. So we will be focusing on that, and we will be focusing on spending some capital on marketing and driving new customers to the platform. That's the first point. Second point, we do need a little sprinkling of blue sky, and we do need a little sprinkling of some of the fairy dust that you're talking about that lots of private companies and US companies have in this space. And we feel that there are great opportunities with larger companies in the space with our Amplify part of the platform to really deliver some larger revenue streams, not just the standard SaaS-based revenue streams that we have. And there are one or two potential joint ventures that we can do down the line as and when the time is right to hopefully drive and deliver additional value, whether it's customer acquisition or whether it's increased revenue streams, because it is an area where there is a lot of opportunity, but it's also an area where you can really drive significant upside. I mean, the average SaaS platform business in the UK has 37,000 customers. That's the average, not the largest.
So I suppose this is the point, Dan, are we going to get plenty of news, or is it just going to be silence while you guys grow?
I think if I answer that directly, the Nomad might come across my kitchen counter out of the blue and grab a sort of that. So I won't. I'm kind of getting used to public markets life. I think, you know, James is bang on, right? You know, we've approached this from a slightly different angle. You know, we're two working class lads, started in the city, have worked very hard. We enjoy our jobs, but we are business people. And we approach this as a business first and a technology company second. It's very easy to build technology. I've built tons and tons of projects. I've worked with huge organizations. What's hard is convincing people to buy technology. That is next to impossible. So what we decided to do is build technology that people are already buying. What do people spend their money on? They spend it on growth services, whether it's agencies doing social media, non-exec directors, corporate governance, whatever. Okay, you already spend that. I don't need to convince you. How can I do it quicker, cheaper, more affordably? And I guess I had this conversation over Christmas with a friend, and we were talking about value drivers, and he asked me the same question, and I gave him a relatively similar answer. But what I did say is our business sits in a really nice sweet spot where we've got the scalability of SaaS, talking about the numbers that James was talking about, you know, the 30,000, the 40,000, and we've got the monetization of your traditional advisors going above that £499 in some of the premium products, talking about several thousand pounds a month kind of generating, still saving customers money, but creating kind of a much more attractive operating margin for the business. When you combine those two together, actually we start to see some significant growth, and you start to see those numbers. Average AI valuation kind of for funding rounds was 25 times 1 year future revenues. We're significantly well below that. The highest was about 500x forward year revenues, which is Hugging Face, which is quite wild. The reason these valuations exist is because of the scalability. And when you look at say, you know, James, saying, okay, there's a couple of 100 customers, we make significant revenues, and you say, okay, what's the waiting list? Okay, we're at 600-700 customers now, and we're onboarding, you know, the first couple of weeks, we onboarded 20 customers a week. When you start to add these numbers together, I guess it's not a question of, will we be providing news flow to the market? The question is, how frequently and how structured do we want to provide that news flow? Because we're going to have it by proxy, by nature. There are no pure SaaS businesses listed in the UK, which I think is horrendous, because they're lovely businesses, right? Because you've got a constant flow of customers, you've got predictable revenue, you've got demonstrable technology, really, really good. So I think we've got the opportunity to update the market as frequently as we're comfortable with. And whether that's with some of these big name customers, as James is saying, kind of the attractiveness to your kind of big blue chip multinational company, whether it's PLC customers coming on, using their stakeholder communities, their bulletin boards, ADVFN, LSE, social media platforms, starting to use that not as a burden, but as a tool to power their growth, whether we're announcing them, whether it's private companies, kind of first step of their journey. We've got this huge plethora and kind of cross-section of SMEs in the UK. And then you go, okay, what's the target market? What's the addressable market? Look at other companies and go, okay, we've got 300 potential customers. We've got 400. There's 4.5 million SMEs in the UK. And we're not short of ideas in terms of who can use this product. The question is, how quickly do we want to roll it out? And the capital markets, going back to Phil's first question, is the best platform, I think, to roll it out. It's a shop window for our business. We're sitting alongside other businesses. We've got, I think, a really cool use case, cool technology, and a platform to now really kind of start on the hockey stick of the journey, which is, okay, we've got our first customers on. How exponentially can we grow that customers? How can we turn that 20 onboarded users in a couple of weeks to 500 users in a couple of weeks, 1,000 users in a couple of weeks? And it's just now about optimizing the process. So yes, there's news flow. We've got, I guess, you know, kids in a candy store. What news flow do we want to release, and how do we want to release it? And how does that all fit into kind of the bigger story? Because we are sadly not here for a good time. We're here for a long time. And we want to build out that journey and kind of grow with the UK capital markets and bring everyone along with us.
Yeah, I don't think the Nomad's going to let you away with that one, Danny, but thank you for your answer.
Another song reference.
We've got no chance. I'm going to say that now. We've got no chance. I've been to the candy store.
I would suggest that my analogy seems to be that I see that you're painting this picture that every company that comes along, you're going to give them a bus, okay? And on their journey, they're going to have many, many bus stops that they can stop at. And you're going to make it much cheaper to stop at those bus stops, because ultimately you're on a bus, not a taxi or a private limousine. You're on a bus, and they're on their own bus, which then they're trying to move around, if you like, the monopoly squares to stop at all the different areas that they need to stop at. Now, whether that's a good analogy or not, I don't know. But
I much prefer the racing car on the Monopoly board. I'm going to be honest. That's that. You know, I never found a bus on the Monopoly board. Is there a bus? Yeah. The Top Hat. You're a Top Hat guy, aren't you, Kev?
And I'm a whatever is left guy.
More of an old shoe, I think.
But boots. But yeah, the old boot. No, but what I'm saying is because you're on a bus, you can bring all these experts onto your bus, but they may only stay on for a stop. So it's much cheaper than actually having them as a full-time option. You can get a passenger on, they can be on, and then they can be off. So, you know, I think...
I mean, that's very important. I mean, what we found, Kev, what we found in our market research and when we were out actually talking and working with prospective customers is that the majority of customers have a requirement at a point in time for something very specific in their business. And that could be social media management, as we're kind of talking about here while on the Spotlight product. It could be, you know, an issue with corporate governance, so they need to bring somebody in to support them in that area. And what happens, irrespective of the need at that point in time, they always seem to end up entering to 12-month-long monthly recurring payment contracts, and those contracts can be £2,000 a month, or in some cases in the IR and PR and other worlds, they can be £6,000-£8,000 a month. And those contracts, I mean, we were paying in one of my businesses in my earlier startup lifetime 5 or 6 years ago £4,000 a month for SEO support services. Now, that is an unbelievably over-the-top cost, right? And AdWords and other little bits and bobs. So you're exactly right. We want, and we have built a platform in which companies can come on, they can dip into very specific, high-end, high-quality agency services on a month-by-month basis, delivered for the specific reason and a specific issue that they face at that point in time. They can then have a very cost-effective, holistic platform that offers them base services using AI to deliver the growth requirements for that business over the rest of the 12-month period. And that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, and ultimately, if you use the bus analogy, and I know you'd rather have a race car, but if you use the bus analogy, then every time one of these people gets on, they pay priority the bus ticket. So in other words, you are getting a fee each time some professional is used within this company's business. So in essence, you're taking a cut off the top every time. And this is where I see the revenue can be produced, as well as obviously the ticket price for the AI and their own model. And as that model gets more and more and more efficient and more growth orientated, because ultimately we want to help these companies grow, then your percentage, your ticket price, if you like, is going to go up for each one of these companies. Is that a good analogy or not?
It works. It works certainly to a certain degree. So you have that kind of standard bus fare, and then each time somebody hops on and hops off the bus, there is additional fees. That's correct. But let's think of it in a slightly different version to just the additional fees that we get. As that customer base grows and the opportunity becomes incredibly expansive, doesn't it? Because using the bus analogy, you've then got tens and then hundreds and then potentially thousands of buses on the road, all having that hop on, hop off service at any point in time. And that's where it gets really, really valuable. The other thing, again, that I want to harp back to, which we started on a little bit early on, is the data. Once you've got all of those bus networks out there, and once we've got all of that data being gathered and interrogated on our platform, it's incredibly valuable. I mean, that is the big, big key. So the more customers we can get on platform, obviously the better from a starting point of a short-term revenue, then obviously the additional revenue streams, and then, of course, the real kind of cherry on the top is the data.
I mean, I like that analogy, Kev. I'm probably going to steal it, to be honest. I'll be very honest with you.
It's yours, mate, but I want 10% of everything that you get from it.
Okay, you can have it back. We'll call it a taxi now. No, we'll go with the bus. I like that. And I feel James's point is very, very relevant. You know, take an example that you and Phil both jump on the bus, right? You're business owners, you jump on your bus and you're going to the same destination, which is ultimately growth. It's getting bigger, right? You jump at the same time, you get on your bus, you go through your journey, you turn up at your destination and Phil's there having a pina colada on the beach. And you say, well, we got on at the same time. We got on the same bus. How are you here quicker? And going to that data point, well, what route did Phil's bus take? Now, what advisors do you use? How do you use them? Why was it quicker? Was he using more petrol, less petrol? All of that is the data that comes into that. And if, as James is saying, you've got thousands of buses on the road, they're all going to be arriving at different locations at different times. And that is the data. And that is where we come in kind of, I guess, from a back end point of view, is actually analyzing that data, optimizing it, understanding across every single journey what does work, you know, what works in certain sectors, what works for public companies, for private companies, small companies, big companies. So I think that's very, very important. And I think a big, you know, value add that you're touching on and James is touching on, and maybe we need to divulge from your analogy slightly, is talking about some of these bigger companies. If I am a £1 billion multinational, I might say to you, Kev, I don't want to get on a bus. I'm running a £1 billion company, sod your bus. But I still want to go to the same destination. Okay, well, why don't you jump in a limousine, or why don't you jump in a taxi? The journey's exactly the same, but actually having that premium-led solution, because ultimately we're all trying to get to the same place, right? Whether I'm running ASOS, or I'm running the Priority, or I'm running the Sunday Roast, we're all trying to get bigger, sell more product, get more listeners, get more customers, grow our share price. We're all heading in the same direction. Our journey is going to be different. And the beauty of the platform is that that bus can turn into a taxi or a limo or, you know, a private plane, or it's just a vehicle. Your business is a vehicle. how you get there is really dictated by you as a business. And that kind of customization, where we can service huge companies, you know, like your multinationals, by giving them a more premium offering driven by a more premium level of advisor on some of our plus subscriptions, is in effect the same offering as we're going to some of these kind of small, tiny one-man band startups, but that's kind of the base level. So we've got this kind of level of customization of the technology that allows us to service, you know, every single one of those 4.5 million SMEs, regardless of where they are, which are where I think a lot of tech companies, from my perspective, that I've either worked with or for over the years, they narrow down their target market to a kind of such a finite point where they go, I know exactly what my kind of my core use case and my user journey is, but the pool's so tiny that you end up having to spend so much money and kind of so much CPA to go get that customer, you get yourself in a bit of a pickle. Where we've done really well is saying, okay, are you a business? Do you want to get bigger? Can you afford £499 a month? If you tick all those boxes, welcome to priority. And that creates a really frictionless onboarding process. And the fact that we can onboard automatically and build out these nodes systematically and super quickly means that we've now got this frictionless process, a really easy onboarding. And actually, as long as you've got a community behind you, as long as you've got people talking about your business, whether it's on ADVFN or LSE or on Instagram or Twitter or on your website, they're the power. They're the battery powering your platform. The more they talk about you, the more efficient the platforms are going to become. So we've got this really nice fait accompli where we know where our customers are. We know how to get them. We know we're offering something they already want. It's just a case of going and getting them now.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's been great listening. And obviously, you must be delighted to obviously get the list in a way. But I'll just finish on this one. I mean, if you could share one key message or vision for the company with potential investors and clients, what would it be?
I've got a favorite term. Actually, it's in the Cambridge Dictionary as of recently. It's Uberization. I think it went in like 2 or 3 years ago. And kind of conceptually, it's turning something, it's changing the market for a service by introducing a different way of buying or selling or using it. Obviously, Uber coined the term, it got into the dictionary, and it in effect means taking a product that people already buy and use and changing the way they interact with it. So I think for us, our business, Uberization of growth services or kind of, you know, consultancy services or Uberization of growth is a fantastic way to put it. We're not reinventing the wheel. We're not creating something new. We're giving people something they already buy and spend billions of pounds annually on. We're just doing it in a cheaper way.
And you, using that analogy, Kevin and Phil, of the bus or the race car or even the private jet that Dan mentioned earlier on, we like the idea of, rather than SaaS, software as a service, we like the idea of GAS. So growth as a service, and that's ultimately what we're delivering, growth as a service to the SME landscape in the UK. And if we can drive customers to our platform, we hope that that will drive positive news flow, and we hope that that in turn will drive growth in our share price for the benefit of all of our stakeholders. And that is the 2025 that we're hoping for.
Don't tell the Americans gas, because they'll all think you're farting, okay? So that's not a good option.
We're putting gas in the bus.
They put gas in the tank.
But they also gas.
They're full of hot air. Is that what you're saying? The Americans are full of hot air. No.
I don't believe that you've got gas. I'll invade you. So be careful.
Always the one who has to know what they tell you.
Anyway, whether it be taxis in Uber or buses in Priority or aeroplanes or taxis, let's hope that during 2025 and beyond, that you transport yourself forward, which is, I think, everybody's wish in terms of a company. And let's hope that we can see you a lot over the next year as Dan divulges information, obviously via the Nomad. And let's see if you can progress.
I'm sure we can. Thank you very much, guys, for having us.
Thanks, guys. Daniel G and James Sheehan, Priority Intelligence, thanks very much for your time.
Take care.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.